The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I hope this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this horrifically named podcast series. But the QA is the important part because that stands obviously for question and answer. We like to make this an interactive conversation on the main tech news and the main tech stories that we're trying to keep track of. That's why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday. We get like the whole week of news. Maybe something broke over the weekend. We can kind of sort out our feels on it. Trying something a little different for this stream right here. On the road, I did a last week's show on my OnePlus 9. This is my OnePlus 9. And I was using Restream through the web browser. And it actually worked out pretty well, considering it was all sort of a smartphone-focused stream. So I'm going to try that this week. Let's see how this works. Because it allows me to do some of the fun stuff. Like, you know, I can pop up a comment. And that's kind of fun. So we're going to mix and match some of my previous podcast elements with this new show. Like I can highlight a comment making fun of me. Hashtag some punchable face guy from Gabaletta. It's really good times. So, folks, I'm back in the Gadget Lab. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. We were road tripping through the Southwest, and it's one of the things we're going to talk about at the end of the show. I'm glad to be home again. I'm glad to have like my data and my workstation set up and everything working the way that I want it to. But it was really nice. We got Lex out to see some family. My wife's family and my family both live in New Mexico. So with one road trip, we could kind of cover both sides of the family. And I think for a 5-year-old kid who has been cooped up with her parents for most of the pandemic, it seems to do her really well to see some other family members, some other friendly faces, and to get to play. You know, like it was really fun taking some time out of a road trip. You know, we'd stop at like a gas station and then we'd like run and play tag, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, just gassing up the car and trying to get our steps in for our fitness trackers. So, yes, I hope you had a lovely weekend. I'm raring to go. I'm hoping I can get back into the production swing of things. And I'm probably going to try Why do I say it like that? I'm going to try to keep this show a little more streamlined. My voice is back, but it's still pretty weak, and it doesn't take much to kind of kill it again. 2 weeks back, actually now closer to three, I overdid it. I had way too many live streams and projects all come to a head all at the same time. I mean, it was a really good week for invoicing, you know, as a production dude. When you send out a bunch of invoices for some pretty high dollar amounts, it feels really nice. But they all came to a head at the same time. So I burned out my voice about 3 weeks ago. I followed it up again with another busy week, and then I just got the worst. Like this is easily the most crippling laryngitis I've ever had in my entire life. So see, already right there, I can feel it. So I lost part of the road trip. The road trip plan was to produce a lot more and to do some live streaming, but the combination of laryngitis and rural New Mexican internet connectivity kind of put a kibosh on that. So we're going to talk about what worked and what didn't at the end of the show. invoice for no voice. I should have like hazard pay. Oh, wait, you know, I can do this. Simon says hypno says invoice for no voice. and I'm assuming this one from Nam. How are you healing your voice situation? I've worked in commercial voiceover for two decades, mostly as a director, occasionally as a talent. But you learn a lot about vocal health and biology. Once you properly get to vocal strain, there is no cure. There is no treatment. You can soothe it, and you can reduce inflammation and pain, but the only thing that's going to fix it is vocal rest. And as we all should know by now, I won't shut the F up. So, it takes me a lot longer to heal. Because I keep talking, just talking and talking. And Paul Puri, actually, you know what? So it's not really good for you, but there is a therapeutic benefit to being a fan of good whiskey. So I'll go with you on that one. It truly is amazing how much work can be done with a phone these days. Sadly, you can't fix a cracked, strained voice. Absolutely accurate. chatty boy, some chatty guy. You won't shut up no matter how much we beg. I like playing with the comments like this. This is a lot more fun. Okay, so there is a little bit of housekeeping, and it's going to kind of dovetail into the second half in the gadget block when we talk about the road trip. But I am really proud of what I got out. So, I was able to accomplish a longer term look. Did I not put them in front of me? I swear I just had them in my hand. Oh, they're over here. So I did the road trip review, and I'm going to do kind of like now that I'm back in the lab, and I have to send these back like tomorrow. But the TCL Nextwear, the glasses that, are a heads up display, you know, it's like wearing a giant monitor on your face. I did that all on the road. I was working in a hotel. I was driving through the Southwest. I was failing to get my lap doc working with my V60 because I brought the wrong cable. So these things came in clutch. So I got a video out on that, all shot, edited, rendered, and uploaded from my V60. I got a Nomad accessories review. For Father's Day, I got a Nomad wallet. I was really stoked. I mean, just like, it's this great little streamlined credit card wallet. Absolutely loved it. Nomad saw my tweets and were like, hey, do you want to try a few other accessories? So they sent out a case for my Pixel Buds and a wireless charger. So I shot that all out on the road, which is really exciting, being able to kind of cobble together what I feel is a very similar video editing style to what I do here locally, but just completely on the go. And then I was also able to do a commentary video for reviews.org. And again, all shot from the phone, edited, rendered and uploaded from a V60. So it's a tier of capability. It's just really, really wonderful to be able to kind of streamline a production workflow. But that obviously came with some compromises, and I had to pack a few extra accessories to get that gig done. This one definitely chapped my rear. Hashtag some wrong cable guy. Juan deserves that one for bringing the wrong cable amateur move. So in my defense, the thing that frustrates is I had the U-Perfect X. It's the little lap dock. All of your USB-C cables kind of look the same. And so I packed what I thought was the black USB-C cable that goes with the U-Perfect X. Apparently, it was just a normal USB-C, like power charge sync cable, because it did not support video out. And then I got a Nomad supplies a really nice braided cable with their wireless charger. That didn't work either. And so I had to go to a Best Buy, and the only thing that consistently works is getting a Thunderbolt cable. They look exactly the same. It's all USB-C. So that, to me, is definitely one of the frustrating aspects of working with this kind of gear. Everything that looks the same doesn't perform the same. And I absolutely fell for it. I mean, I should know better. And if I can be confused and have issues with that, imagine your average consumer trying to figure out the same. So, oh, Paul, that was dirty. Well, I'm just going to highlight this comment, but I'm not going to say it out loud. That was rough. Oh, and from Nom, cough three times at any moment on the stream. That will be code for I have a Pixel 5a in house. I don't have a Pixel 5a in house. Okay, so let's jump into some news here. All of the links, all of the articles, all of the housekeeping, everything that we're going to be talking about today can be found on somegadgetguide.com. My website is slowly catching back up now that I've got good data again. If you're on the Patreon, I usually do a 4K version of my videos. I've got to re-upload at least one of them because I couldn't get big videos uploaded while I was in New Mexico. My wife's family lives out in rural New Mexico. My family lives on the border, the sort of the county line of Bernalillo County, so just outside of Albuquerque, kind of far away from the city center. And it's frustrating. In both areas, we were able to get really fast downloads, so we could stream content like crazy. We could not find good upstream data to save our lives without, like, driving me down to the middle of downtown Albuquerque to sit near a library, which I couldn't really take that kind of time out from our road trip or our vacation. It definitely speaks to kind of the infrastructure problems that we've discussed with other net neutrality articles and rural broadband and broadband deployment. We have a long ways to go to clean that kind of stuff up. So let me get this out of the way here. But the first story I want to highlight is one that's been exciting for another one of our ongoing conversations as we keep track of what's happening in tech and politics. Let me see if screen share works. Ready? Oh, this could be amazing or this could bork. Ready? Go. Hey, we got it. This is coming in by way of Wired.com, written up by Lauren Good. The FTC votes unanimously, easy for me to say, to enforce right to repair. The move follows an executive order issued last week by the White House urging the agency to secure consumers' rights to fix their own gadgets. From the article, during an open commission meeting Wednesday, the Federal Trade Commission voted unanimously to enforce laws around the right to repair, thereby ensuring that U.S. consumers will be able to repair their own electronic and automotive devices. The FTC's endorsement of the rules is not a surprise outcome. The issue of right to repair has been a remarkably bipartisan one, and the FTC itself issued a lengthy report in May that blasted manufacturers for restricting repairs. But the 5-0 vote signals the commission's commitment to enforce both federal antitrust laws and a key law around consumer warranties, the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, when it comes to personal device repairs. So when we talk about, like states' rights versus federal rights, or state laws versus federal laws, this is where I am happy to see some kind of low-level federal standard. So now this is the baseline. And states like California might adopt more stringent rules. States like New York might adopt more strict rules. But some of the more conservative-leaning states can't craft local legislation that makes these kinds of protections weaker than the federal standard. Or, I mean, I'm sure there could be a lengthy court battle to fight that out, but it's really just not worth it. A company that wants to do business, I should say a manufacturer that wants to do business in California, is likely going to play by California and New York rules because of the huge population densities, and the rest of the country is just going to have to go along for the ride. But when we have that low-level federal standard, we at least have some expectation that across all of the states in this country, there is some kind of protection or enforcement for manufacturers actually living up to their warranty claims and for allowing consumers some kind of access or some kind of availability for repair and replacement. So we should take this as a significant victory. Again, it's the same reason I feel same feelings I feel about net neutrality. I think it's silly to be against a low-level federal, nationwide standard for net neutrality, even if you're a conservative and you're against regulations, because each state is going to adopt different rules. It's way more difficult for a company to be in compliance because you don't know at least what the bare minimum is. And then you basically give up your legislating and your lawmaking to New York and California because they will craft their own specific standards. And then all companies are going to jump on board for that. The FTC is a very small commission. It's not got a lot of regulatory teeth in terms of funding, and it's very reactionary. A company has to screw up bad for there to be any kind of punitive action from a commission like the FTC or the FCC. So I think this is a step in the right direction. It can't be too heavy-handed because legitimately this commission doesn't have the funds to enforce really aggressive, proactive, heavy-handed regulatory action. But we need something. We need something that consumers can fall back on. The next time a smartphone manufacturer throttles because of putting in inadequate batteries, we need something that can properly showcase that as an undesirable marketplace position. And the FTC is the right organization for this type of action, especially in light of all of the recent consumer antitrust investigations being conducted by the House and the Senate. So this is a critical win. This is a significant step. It's only one step, but it's a significant step towards highlighting better policy for right to repair. As I think we've seen, there's a conversation happening right now, and I'm going to focus mostly on smartphones because that's kind of my bread and butter right now. I can pick up a phone from 2018 and have not only an adequate, but a perfectly reasonable, high quality, solid performance experience. There's very little that feels different when you compare across three generations of smartphone, or sometimes even four generations of smartphone, depending on your use. I was on the road not using the latest and greatest, most powerful smartphones in my collection. I was using an LG V60, and I was backed up by an LG V50 for my road trip reviewing. I feel like that speaks to sort of the cat and mouse game of consumer electronics. I'm waiting for more software to actually utilize this incredible hardware that's packed into our phones. But we're two generations out. We're two generations out of these devices really being taxed. And a Snapdragon 855 in the hand can often hang with many of our newer Snapdragon 888s. So if we don't have some type of low-level policy to encourage repair, these perfectly powerful, wonderful, premium devices will really be dead. I mean, difficult and undesirable to use after 2 years if we can't easily replace a battery. If we don't have options or choice for support and replacement, you crack a screen, you want to know that you can fix it. And it's the first step of a conversation where consumers will have more options and more choice. I mean, that will mean some repair shops are going to scam people, but we've got to encourage a healthier marketplace of repair. We can't let Samsung and Apple dictate how long your device will really live and then penalize people with older devices by serializing replacement parts and by making battery replacements increasingly difficult. Now, Apple gets to decide how long your phone will be repairable. And that shouldn't be, because they have a vested interest in selling you the next iPhone. Excuse me. From Utaku, politics in my tech news, what is the world coming to? And cries. There are a lot of comments here to kind of catch up on. This is exactly what I'm talking about from Simon Says Hypno. I didn't realize that Samsung are locking down their mid-rangers now. In fact, I think it started with the Galaxy A series when they started serializing some of their replacement parts. It's not as pervasive as Apple's repair ability issues, but anything Apple does, if Samsung can make money on it, you know they're going to copy it. There's really not an original strategy at Samsung in regards to things like repairability, battery replacements, removing features from phones. Literally a year after Apple does something, we can count on Samsung doing something similar. So easily one of the top stories of my last week, just to keep an eye on where it might go. And hopefully we see a little bit more activity at the state level now. I really do want to see individual states start examining their own citizens' use, how they use gadgets, how they're recycling gadgets, how they're disposing of gadgets. And we have some major problems. I really genuinely believe now there's no reason you shouldn't get 4 good years out of a premium tier smartphone purchase. And even a mid-ranger, like if you can go back to a Snapdragon 660, that is still an adequate daily driver communicator tier of power. 4K video and reasonably powerful internals for driving the UI. There's no reason why 4 years should be inaccessible for any phone. And not just, well, I get updates, not just the software updates, but all of the other aspects of support that go into maintaining a product, replacing and repairing a product. I'm hoping this is the step in the direction that we needed. Oh, yeah. Luis Rossman just talked about Samsung making contracts with manufacturers to not sell certain batteries and parts to get around right to repair. So with the FTC examining those types of business practices, that's where we should have some. Because again, as an individual consumer, you have no power. You buy a product and you're beholden to that manufacturer's terms of service, the end user licensing agreement. But collectively, we can engage in a class action lawsuit. Still might not really deliver the change we want. It's just that the company will have to acknowledge a group of people are unhappy. If we have a federal commission that can be encouraged to act on consumers' behalf, now we've got another tool in our arsenal to course correct for bad business decisions like Samsung being collusive. I'm not saying Samsung is. I'm just saying they have in the past. Like flash memory and RAM pricing, they worked with other component manufacturers to make sure that pricing didn't get too competitive and that there wasn't too much fluctuation. We see Samsung, especially in South Korean politics, they're very adept at manipulating the local political scene to their advantage, so much so that the future chairman of Samsung is, I believe, still in prison, especially for stock market manipulation. So if we don't have some kind of leverage to push back against undesirable business practices, then things get demonstrably worse. Oh, and from Ray Mondit, I love hearing this. My LG V30 has the 835, and the only reason to update is 5G if we ever get it here. I feel like the 845 became our sort of standard. When the 765 came out as a mid-ranger, the 765 was slightly more power, and please correct me, I think I might have this backwards, but I believe it was more powerful, slightly more powerful as a CPU and slightly less powerful as a GPU. But 845 became that sort of long-term look at what smartphones were. The 855 improved on that. The 865 mostly improved, had some radio issues with LTE and Wi-Fi performance. If you're on an 835, you're still perfectly adequate. I mean, that is still a premium level of pocketable compute power. We have been grossly overbuying compute power for years now. From Dave Burns, isn't the Samsung CEO going to jail? Because again, there's like a weird family dynamic at Samsung. And I don't know if it's the CEO, but the future chairman, the son of the current chairman, because it's dynastic rule at Samsung, is currently in prison. And as far as I know, there aren't any plans to remove him from that position after he gets out of prison. All right, moving right along. This one, I caught the article in literally minutes after I saw this article. It was shared in the private Discord by Dave Burns. So everyone give a huge thumbs up to David, because we were definitely on the same wavelength. And a story like this, he knew was going to be right up my alley. I'm a huge proponent and advocate for higher quality audio. I just shot a video on the Apogee Groove, which is a little mini DAC amp, which is pretty killer. That's going to be coming out soon. And I also shot a video on the THX Onyx, another little DAC amp, which is flipping phenomenal. I want people to experience higher quality audio, but we also need to have some really frank conversations about healthier listening. I can kind of put a little money, Puro Labs, a little money where my mouth is. I've been playing with a couple different solutions for Lex. She's got a little music player. We gave it to her and it's hers. Like, I can't take it away from her. I'm not going to do that as a punishment. I might tell her to put it in a box or something, but I mean, this is her thing. She's going to take care of it. She's 5 and a half and she loves music, from little nursery rhymes to, she has very strong feelings on different albums from the Foo Fighters and which albums she likes better, and a whole collection of OK Go music videos. And she loves Joan Jett. I mean, it's just, I love it. I love watching her explore this. We were just on this road trip and we've been playing with a couple different headphone solutions. And so we spent a bit. These are not cheap, but we got Lex the Puro Labs, Puro Quiets. These are active noise canceling Bluetooth headphones. They're phenomenal because they're also built for smaller ears. And she got a big kick out of us giving her headphones that I couldn't wear. So she's not just borrowing a pair of daddy's old headphones. Like, these are for her. And they also came in like electric neon pink. So she loved that too. But they're pricey. They're $120. I can't tell you, these things were lifesavers on a really long road trip because they're volume limiting. They won't go over 85 dB, but we also, she could control the volume and she would turn the volume down even when we were in the car because they're noise canceling. If you've ever been on a road trip, unless you've got the lushest luxury car. Internal cabin noise in a car going 75 miles an hour, certainly not exceeding the speed limit. My tick watch would regularly show over 90 dB. And sometimes significantly higher. You hit those rough patches outside like Flagstaff, you're doing the mountain driving, you're hitting the engine really hard, the transmission's really spinning, and you hit a rough patch of road, that can easily spike over 100 decibels inside the car. That's with all of the sound reinforcement. She didn't have to turn up the volume on her movies or music because we bought her nicer cans. And again, she's got perfect new little kid ears. You know, she's very sensitive to, like, a fire engine goes by, and without even thinking about it, it's just an instinct for her to kind of block her ears. It's not a fear reaction. It's not an overstimulation reaction. It's just, you know, it's loud. It's uncomfortable. She doesn't want to have to mess with it. And I want to encourage that. And I want those habits to start early. The dynamics and color and the beauty of good audio can be expressed without just cranking the volume to blow your ears out. So that's that's a part of sorry, that was a really long-winded way to get back into this story. But we're only just starting to untangle what some of the longer term ramifications of hearing loss might be. And I'm starting to feel more strongly about some of the more fringe hypotheses. They're not theories. They don't explain or predict yet, but we're accruing more data to suggest that hearing loss has more health implications than just, oh, you can't hear. And this study, led by University of Oxford researchers, should be kind of one of those canary in the coal mine warnings. Let me throw this back up on the screen. Difficulty hearing speech could be a risk factor for dementia. A new study led by University of Oxford researchers on over 82,000 participants has shown that difficulty hearing spoken conversations is associated with up to 91% increased risk of dementia. Just the key results: over 11 years of follow-ups, 1,285 participants were identified as developing dementia based on hospital inpatient and death register records. Insufficient and poor speech and noise hearing were associated with a 61% and 91% increased risk of developing dementia compared to normal speech and noise hearing, respectively. So I do not believe.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
That hearing loss is just age-related. When we encounter societies that are a little less technologically infused than more Western society, when they're not bombarded by constant noise in their environment and from their entertainment, we don't see the same distinct rates of hearing loss. And in the modern era, we're seeing rates of hearing loss increase in younger and younger people. So there, to me, is a much more environmental-based cause to hearing loss than just, well, as you get older, your ears wear out. Instead, I think as you get older, you've just subjected your ears to so much impact and so much noise that that's what's wearing them out. More so than just age degradation. Well, now we're finding that when you starve the brain of important pieces of information like human speech, parts of your brain might start to degrade. And it seems as you lose the ability to hear speech in complicated environments, that's a pretty good predictor of you possibly encountering some type of degenerative disease later in life. If there's ever been a call to say, take care of your ears and protect what you still have, I don't know what else we could serve. You know, I've encountered so many people, well, I've already lost my hearing, nothing I can do about it now. Well, you still have some. So why don't you protect that? And this would be a really good time to start the process of trying to see an audiologist, where some hearing aids might bring back some of that, your ability to hear, or even some of those hearables. They're so silly and they're kind of expensive, but they genuinely do a phenomenal job of filtering out noise and helping you focus on speech. Sometimes they sound a little AM radio, but do you want to hear the person you're talking to, or do you want to constantly be going, huh, what? And I definitely suffer from some of that. If I'm in a busy coffee shop and hard tile and reflective surfaces on all the walls, I can't hear someone sitting right in front of me. I'm reading lips as much as I am actually hearing their speech. This to me is also another data point to consider my own personal health, because I kind of like my brain and I'd prefer it to stay functioning as I get older. I'd like to have a decent quality of life as I become a senior citizen. So here, just trying to catch it back up with the chat here. From Otaku. Yeah, that sounds very concerning. Turns out a lot of our hobbies and habits cause serious illnesses and conditions. Slightly terrifying. From TED Talks, TED Talks Tech. Could not say that. Correlation, not causation. We don't know the function of, we don't fully understand how the ear degrades. We don't understand the functions of the brain that directly relate to this. What we're seeing in a study like this is pretty good data to suggest predictive. I mean, right now, this has been an ongoing conversation. As you lose your hearing, that might affect balance, that might affect cognitive issues. And this is another study following up on degenerative brain diseases and dementia. When we start seeing numbers like 91%, we don't understand the cause. I don't believe anyone is claiming they understand how the damage to the cilia in the inner ear results in a lowered frequency response for human speech, might contribute to tinnitus, and what that does to the auditory signal paths going to the brain, and then what parts of the brain are directly affected for these types of degenerative diseases. If we understood all of that, we probably have a better handle on treating degenerative brain diseases. But now we've got pretty good data to suggest that there is a correlation, and it's highly predictive, to the tune of 91%. That should be concerning for all of us, especially those of us who have already experienced some hearing degradation and some hearing loss. Now would be the right time to change your behavior, find other solutions, and look at some types of treatments to improve that situation. So we can say correlation does not equal causation. Cool. But we've got some correlating trends that should be very concerning. So it's up to you. You can take the risk. Go ahead. Blow out your ears, because we don't know the cause yet. You might be totally fine. Right? You're a science experiment of one. from Gabaletta, I love hearing stuff like that. My daughter does the same to any noise she perceives as loud. She covers her ears very frequently, specifically in the car. I got her noise dampening earmuffs to help with this. I've tried ANC OEMs, but she finds them uncomfortable. First of all, good job. There's this stigma. Like, we tell kids to just get over it. Oh, it's not that bad. Oh, I know. It's like this piercing sound that's coming from a fire engine, and it hurts me. But you, with your tiny little ears that are even more sensitive to higher frequency sound, you should just get over it. Toughen up. I don't get this, like, this bravado, you know, like, just suck it up. You'll eventually kill your ears enough that it won't bother you. I don't get it. I really don't. And I feel like it's terrible. You can see this tiny little person that it's my job to take care of is in distress. And you're like, you know what? I can at least try. So sound dampening earmuffs, good job. I mean, that is looking at the situation, registering the discomfort of your child and saying, yeah, it's cheap. I can do something about that. You know, what I would recommend is seeing if you can find some inexpensive open ear earbuds. I would normally not recommend these, but if there's a good seal around those noise dampening earmuffs, you can kind of sneak in some open ear earbuds and she should be able to listen at much, much lower volume because you're dampening the noise with passive noise reduction. I would never recommend using open ear earbuds in an open car noisy environment, but you've already tackled most of the job. You're reducing the noise around her. So that might be an option too if she doesn't like that kind of stuffy ear feeling of ANC. I think my daughter's just enough of a nerd like me, like she comes by it honest, that when I flipped the switch on ANC and she felt, it wasn't even so much that she heard, but she felt the perception shift of everything going a little quieter. I think she just thought that was neat, whether or not she really finds it comfortable. But she's watched a couple movies now on this road trip. She was watching, we would like stop for lunch and then she would watch a movie in the car. She did that 3 or 4 times. She genuinely just seemed to jam on them. Like they were her gig. She liked them. She was taking care of them. She was learning how to plug them in and charge them. It's just wonderful for a techie dad to see that kind of recognized in my daughter. Hashtag some needs to work on his tongue twisters guy. And from Aditya, I'm totally suffering with this too. I struggle to hear people through face masks. It's also no excuse to make people shout and look like an idiot. So my problem is I was already struggling to hear people. I go to make an order at a Starbucks. I can't hear the barista under normal conditions. I doubly can't hear the barista when there's plexiglass in between me and them and they're wearing a mask. And in years past, I would watch their mouth. And now I can't do that because they're wearing a mask. So it's tough. I totally get that issue. Dave Burns, agree to disagree. My life has to suck, so yours does too. I'm my daughter's not yet 6, and I'm having those conversations like, well, when daddy used to go to concerts, I would stand right in front of the big loudspeakers, and she looks at me like I'm an idiot. So I'm leaning into that. Don't be like daddy. And one more from Aditya here. I've noticed that I tend to listen at higher volumes on my Bluetooth earbuds. Looks like I'm going back to peasant wired earphones. First of all, don't trust the volume slider. So you might be listening at the same acoustic pressure, but at different volume stages. So when your Bluetooth earbuds take over, you might be at volume setting 10 out of 12. But when you're cabled, the same acoustic pressure might be generated at a different volume step as your phone registers that. I mean, the only way to really chart would be to try and hook up some mics and see, you know, on my Bluetooth earbuds, if I turn it up louder on the volume scale, is it putting out the same type of pressure as my cabled earbuds? But find a comfortable limit and try not to worry about it. Always set your comfortable limit sitting in the quietest environment that you can generate. So give your ears a break, put on your headphones, dial up to where you think like, okay, this is the threshold of what I find comfortable, and then drop it one step down below that. That's your volume limit. That's your healthy volume level. And you can actually retrain yourself to bring it back down. If you're constantly that person that's always maxing out your headphones, you can recover. You can retrain your ears and your brain to appreciate good audio at lower levels. The biggest problem you're going to have is blocking noise. So the more competition your ears have in your environment, the louder you need to turn up your music to overpower that competition. this is where good fitting in ear monitors, active noise cancellation, good seal. So even on cans with ANC, if you don't have a good seal around the ear, the ANC won't be as effective. And this is what we all have to kind of like, I feel like we need to make the effort. I think we need to protect our brains. Hey. So exactly, Aditya, that's, you make a fair point. I do need to set a comfortable limit using my Bluetooth earphones. I've been slacking in that regard, especially because for a lot of folks, it's your wireless stuff that's going to be used out and about. So, again, I was very concerned about the Pixel Buds. I'm anxious about a volume manipulating feature. They get louder and they feel louder when there's more noise around you. That stuff needs to be handled very carefully. So I feel like those were the two main news stories that I just wanted to follow up on. And I kind of talked them out a little bit longer than I intended to. I want to take a little bit of a break here. Let's plug the subreddit because I didn't win my subreddit this week. We've got the mix on our glowing rectangles this week is kind of phenomenal. And, I've been talking about the number of subscribers to the subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Reddit rounds you up to the next 100. So as soon as we hit 1,851 subscribers on our glowing rectangles, it shows that we've got 1.9 thousand members. While I was out in New Mexico, we officially broke 1,900. And this morning, we're at 1,905 members on the subreddit. Folks, I'm just so stoked. Like, every time I go to this Reddit, not only do we see more members, more subscribers, I'm seeing more people actively online. It might be 10 people here or 20 people there. Right now, as I pulled up the page, 29 people online. 29. This is organic growth. It's real. It's grassroots. And every time we check in with this, I'm just so encouraged to continue this experiment. We need to do a better job of highlighting content creators that deserve more attention. And that's not going to come from Facebook and YouTube style algorithms. So these are the top stories on Glowing Rectangles. So much good stuff. This was such a good week for the subreddit. A number one with a bullet. The top story by far, Team Vry with 1,700 subscribers, 1.7 thousand subscribers on YouTube, filming a travel video on the Pixel 4a 5G. It's not commentary. It's not, a vlog. He's not, doing a video about the Pixel 4a 5G. He's showing us vacation footage. And right now, that is such a... like a refreshing or encouraging kind of video style, all shot from a mid-ranger phone. The Pixel 4a 5G camera is phenomenal. And I don't know completely understand why Pixel's got this reputation for having terrible video, because they don't, and they haven't for a long time. I mean, the video from a Pixel 3a is solid. It just starts to fall apart a little bit in the darkest conditions, but it's gorgeous video. It's phenomenal 4K video. Shot. Team Vry. This is such a fun look at taking a brief trip. I think he was traveling through London. Wonderful. Really, really great video. And to see like some passion. It's not a top of the line phone. It's still perfectly capable of delivering premium content. This is exactly the kind of like vacation footage that you would look back on in your life, all captured from a solid mid-spec phone. Just wonderful. It made my heart so happy to see this at the top of the subreddit. Moving right along, in second position, we've got Tech Alter, Why Samsung Phones Failed in China. And then number three, my brother from another mother, TK Bay, finally finishing his TCL 20 Pro 5G review, the things I enjoyed and my concerns. Rounding out the top five, we've got Sony 365 checking out the Xperia 1 Mark III, and we've got 9to5 Google talking more hands-on with Android 12 Beta 3 features. So we've got all kinds of stuff mixing it up on this week for reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Sneed Mobile Tech, we've got Painfully Honest Tech, we've got Pixels. So this is a channel with 24 subscribers making it into the top 10 on this ranking. Xperia 1 Mark III misconceptions. When was the last time YouTube served you up a content creator with 24 subscribers? I don't believe that happens very often. And if I go and click subscribe on his channel, YouTube is going to look at the tech content and say, oh, but you really want to follow this other person who has 5 million subscribers. And I'm going to say to YouTube, I went out of my way to subscribe to a channel with 24 subscribers. You know what? I'm going to do it right now. So here's Pixels. And I'm going to click. Oh, wait, there he goes. And I'm going to click subscribe. Pixels now has 25 subscribers. I love it. I love it. I would never have found that channel on YouTube. I'm a subscriber now. That's what I want to build. That's what I feel our community desperately needs to get out of this horrific lockstep popularity algorithm nonsense. So, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. It's the weekly plea. We need people to subscribe to the subreddit, but we desperately need more participation. We need those upvotes. Don't be stingy. You go to visit the subreddit, click the up arrows. Support the production because someone went out of their way to share this content because they genuinely believed it needed or it deserved more attention. We're not going to get there by passively consuming and following the YouTube trend. The YouTube trend is going to make every community worse for its manipulation of outrage content. YouTube only cares about your time on site, and if they need to piss you off to get there, it's terrible for your mental health, it's terrible for the mental health of content creators, and you don't get better content. You've got to step outside, and you've got to make the effort. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles is my attempt at trying to contribute to a solution, and I hope you check it out, because it's encouraging. It's encouraging to see some different commentary and a broader commentary from around the world. Everyone be like Dave Burns. I do a daily upvote smash. Is there a way we can make this a trend? Like if I share something on Twitter, hey folks, it's time for your daily upvote trend on Glowing Rectangles. These are the top stories. Is that something we would be interested in? I feel like a little social media kind of helping to signal boost. Like we could do that. Let me know if that's what it takes to kind of help encourage some more participation. I'm all for it. Especially when my videos are back in the mix so I can win on my own subreddit again. All right, moving right along. We've got a couple of texters. Sorry. I was kind of cracking myself up there and then I got stuck in my own throat. I gotta be careful. I might need to bring in the talking because I'm projecting probably more than I need to. The soothing drinking of water as I go full ASMR on this microphone here. All right, we got a couple stories here in the gadget block. I'm not particularly encouraged by this leak. The Microsoft Surface Duo was one of my favorite products to play with of last year. Genuinely. The most polished, radical tablet experiment I think I've ever seen. Not the best phone, but it delivered and it encouraged an excitement over Android as a tablet style operating system, where I'd kind of given up. I was like, oh, well, if you want something more computery, you go Chrome OS. If you want something that's more of like a standalone tablet, you look at an iPad. And then I prefer Android phones. Playing with Android on a Microsoft folding dual display, beautiful hinge device kind of rekindled some interest in using Android for other more radical form factors. So this one, I mean, it was shared around quite a bit, but I caught it first on Engadget. So this is written up by John Fingus. Microsoft Surface Duo 2 leak hints at a massive camera upgrade. So this is some kind of hardware or prototype leak. And there are some concerns over how this might work. So it looks a little like a Surface Duo. It's a white dual panel hinged device. It's a dual display device, but it's got one of those long rectangular domino camera modules that sticks out from the rear of the phone. One of the biggest issues with the Duo is building such a sleek and slim panel over two separate screens. If you want it to fold perfectly flat, you can't have any bumps or bulges. So when I see something like this, I have to believe that when you want to flip it into one screen use, it's always going to be kind of an obnoxious wedge shape. It's never going to be perfectly flat. Oh, actually, I've got my Duo over here. I forgot. I had it on the bookshelf behind me. Like if you can see, I can't gesture. I'm doing this mirror. So in that box right there, I've got a whole bunch of Hulkbusters. And they were protecting my Surface Duo. So there is no camera bulge on the back of this because the only camera is a respectable selfie camera, but it's a terrible main shooter compared to other rear cameras on our phones. So you take this and you fold it all the way flat and it's gorgeously flat. So if you want to use it as a standalone phone, it feels like a BlackBerry Passport. You know, it's wide and it's broad, but it's wonderfully functional in the single screen. If you always have it as some kind of wedge shape, I don't know that would be as fun or as nice. And you would always feel like there's this one pressure point. So whatever they make the back glass out of is going to have to contend with a bulge that puts pressure on one part of the rear panel. So that could either be bad for the camera housing or that could be bad for the other panel that has the Microsoft logo on it. I don't love that. I kind of either make it all a little bit thicker so that you can still maintain a flush camera surface like the camera sensors on a TCL 20, right? We don't have huge bulges there, but we can find other phones that are good examples of improving camera quality and keeping the surface flush with the rear glass. The flatness, this is a feature. This isn't a bug. You know, this is what makes the Surface such a unique hand in the hand kind of experience. And I even keep it naked. I don't even use the little bumpers because if I flip it all the way around, the bumpers create kind of like a space or a bulge. Well, maybe that's what they're building it around. Maybe they're going to come up with those adhesive bumpers that make it feel more flush, but it won't close perfectly flat. So I'm critically interested. I'm very excited that we might see some kind of hardware iteration, but I'm also really concerned. I think you're going to have to make it a little thicker regardless. The rumors are saying that it's going to have an 888. That's a really hot and thirsty SoC. That means you need more battery. And there just legitimately is not more space in a Surface. Why I feel the Duo had a Snapdragon 855 instead of an 865 is because the 865 requires a separate modem. The modem does not live on the SoC. So when they built this, and it was originally built around the Snapdragon 855, where the LTE modem is a component on the SoC, there's just no more room to move to put a modem somewhere else. So you stick with the 855, and it's genuinely a screamer performer. I mean, it really is a powerful, snappy tablet. And in Android land, it's one of the most powerful tablets that also has an LTE connection attached to it. DTNL, please don't have an 888. Gabaletta, this would be a great idea. I would totally support this. Make each side somewhat of a wedge so that at the thickest end, you can house a couple of cameras flushed. I would actually kind of like that, because then when you lay it flat, it wouldn't be perfectly flat, but it would be like just kind of a little bit of a butterfly or a book. Like, that could be kind of cool. It's resting on a table and it's just slightly elevated. But then when you close it, even though it's a wedge, it feels continuous and it doesn't feel like you're putting pressure on exactly one edge or one seam. When the Duo first came out, I was hoping someone would make a case with a slight wedge shape to it, because then you would have a little bit of extra drop or bumper protection. And because of the way that this totally butterflies 365 degrees, I thought that would be a cool way to protect it. A wedge shape. I want a wedge bumper for the Duo so bad. It's such a good idea. Dave Burns, the 888 will make it a spicy pillow machine. And Al Gregg, the 855 is a monster. Absolutely. From my tech review, I wonder why they didn't go with a MediaTek Dimensity 1200. Microsoft's partnerships are pretty specific. You know, I'm still bummed that I get way more Windows functionality on a Samsung phone than I do on any other Android device which would support it. So I would have to believe that as Microsoft is looking at Windows on ARM, their main production partner is probably Qualcomm. So they're likely going to stick with that as a relationship moving forward for different devices. So from Copacash, this is true. Copacash says the 870 is a more than capable SoC. For the Duo design, the 870 is basically an 865. So if they're building more space into it, that would probably be fine. You can have the separate modem. The 888 puts the modem back on the SoC. So really what I hope they do, if Microsoft decides to use the 888 and we're still trying to keep the Duo 2 relatively slim, then I hope we get better throttling controls. Especially as we're starting to look at Android 12 power management. OnePlus is committing to better power management controls for their next iteration of Android, whatever Oxygen Color OS hybrid we end up getting on our phones. And so I would hope that Microsoft would do something similar. I bagged on Samsung pretty hard especially when they launched early and they were advertising everyday Epic and the most powerful processors they've ever put into their phones, but they shipped undisclosed to the consumer with the CPU throttled. I felt like that was kind of a lie. You know, their marketing was almost dishonest. I feel like if Microsoft could get ahead of some of their laptop style power management and make it a little bit more like what Sony is doing with HS Power Control, starting off with an 888 X1 core throttled so that it performs more like an 855 would be genius. Give me a performance tier for when I really need it, but give me smart laptop style controls for charging and for power management. And in a tablet, that would be epic. So I hope that that's what they can do to kind of compensate for some of the build, because I don't want this phone to get super chunky so that we can build, like, you know, multiple batteries into this thing and really deal with all of the hot hardware.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet. and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
What's up, everybody? This is Eric the Tech Preacher from Easy Computer Solutions. So if you love technology and you want to go deep and in depth about smartphones, tablets, computers, smartwatches, and more, check me out on YouTube. Open up YouTube.com or open up the YouTube app on your favorite smartphone or tablet and type in The Tech Preacher and join my community. Also, I have a live stream every Wednesday night that's called Wired Wednesday, where we talk about all things tech. I have an amazing group of people that's on my panel where we go deep and talk about the realness about technology. So come join my awesome community of techies on Easy Computer Solutions. Remember, I'm the Tech Preacher. So I want to thank Juan Carlos Bagnell for allowing me the opportunity to be on this short clip. So, Juan, back to you.
Remember Continuum? Aw, good times. And again, like, on a duo, it's, like, as close to, like, kind of iPad-style multitasking as you can get without needing a separate desktop mode. Like, I plug the Duo into a laptop, and it formats strange because of the aspect ratio on the screens, but the swiping, the gestures, how it automatically launches apps in kind of a split screen, it's really nice. Just as another quick follow-up, this has been kind of a continuing story as we've been getting little trickles of information, but Google finally spelled out something that I was really hoping to see. It seems that the development on Wear OS 3, the next generation of Android or of Google's smartwatch operating system, it seems we're kind of running into some small stumbles. And I think in part the relationship between Google and Samsung is the major priority. So if Google and Samsung are working on this together and Samsung is having issues getting a new smartwatch out the door, you wait until Samsung is in good shape before you move forward. You don't launch the OS without your major manufacturing partner on board. But that does mean a couple other players are in strange holding patterns. We're waiting for Fossil. Fossil will eventually, they're saying they will eventually start using these new components, the Snapdragon 4100. They are working on a next generation of smartwatch. But TicWatch kind of pulled the opposite tactic. So I'm still wearing my TicWatch Pro 3, and right here on the desk, I've got my TicWatch E3, which increasingly is looking like a better and better bargain. That what you get with the brand new SoC, the correct amount of storage and RAM, this is one of the best smartwatches, bang for buck, on the market today. It's priced just slightly higher than some of your good mainstream fitness trackers, but it's snappy, it's quick. In fact, it's even a little bit more fluid than my Pro in similar situations. I just stick with my Pro because I like the dual display and how I get 3 days of battery life. But the actual swiping experience is a little smoother on the E3. Oh, and everyone say, hey, Tech Loving Mama. She's in the chat. I'm going to just kind of highlight there. Hey. So what we didn't know about TicWatch was the support. The relationship between Google and Mobvoi, I'm sure is a tight partnership, because Mobvoi has kind of been keeping Wear OS alive with their hardware. I know Fossil probably sells more, but I feel like the better watches have been the Mobvoi Wear OS watches. So we finally got confirmation from Google what Wear OS 3 means for you. And they are confirming Wear OS devices that will be eligible for upgrade include Mobvoi's TicWatch Pro 3 GPS, TicWatch Pro 3 LTE, TicWatch E3, and follow-on TicWatch devices, as well as Fossil Group's new generations of devices launching later this year. So we're now expecting Wear OS 3 as an update in the second half of 2022. So this is disappointing to me, because the early sort of chatter on this, especially when Samsung announced their partnership and how they were going to be going back to Wear OS, I felt like
that meant we'd be getting Wear OS 3 the end of this year in 2021. It seems that rollout is a bit more complicated and getting new devices on store shelves is taking a little bit longer, especially for Samsung. It's a shame. You know, you would think Samsung would be better at manufacturing and developing these kinds of things because Mobvoi has no issues getting some really nice watches out the door. But it seems like 2022 or second half of 2022 is now the go time for Wear OS 3. So here's the deal. If you're buying a watch today, Mobvoi, it's literally the only watch I can strongly recommend for now detailed and disclosed future update support from Google. I mean, I feel like you could get a less expensive watch, and if you're fine kind of rocking that for a year, knowing that you're sort of off the update train. If you have anything with a Wear 3100 or a Wear 2100, you're not going to get this update. I don't think Fossil is going to update any of their older watches. I know like they'll probably still get like bug fixes or security patches, but you're not going to get new operating system updates from here on. It's anything with a Snapdragon 4100, and the only watches being sold are Mobvoi. So the TicWatch Pro 3 has already been on sale for ridiculously low prices. Like I think I saw it as low as $230 at one point. That's monster hardware to have not only under $300, but like well under $300. So this is good news. I feel much better about the kind of recommendations here, knowing that Mobvoi wasn't ahead of the curve and these watches would get left out. I had a strong feeling they'd be on the update train, but now we've got confirmation that they will be receiving the Wear OS update 3. Oh, from Snorkel. That's kind of sad. We aren't allowed to wear smartwatches trackers at work due to security concerns. Okay with me. I still love mechanical watches, self-winders for the win. I still have a small collection of like my little analog watches and I'd still bring them out. But again, I'm a nerd. I don't like looking at notifications on my phone. And genuinely, with the TicWatch Pro 3 and the TicWatch E3, how easy it is to react or reply to notifications from the watch is beautiful. For a lot of text conversations, I'm not using my phone anymore. The improvement to the keyboard, even silly things like you would have to do that weird like scribble on the watch screen to get to like an emoji. And now it's just a normal emoji menu, kind of Apple Watch style. And it's so quick. I mean, those kinds of things like really help streamline some of those brief interactions where I hate stopping my day to stare at a phone, put the phone back in my pocket and get on with my day. So those types of things I've genuinely come to enjoy, even on Wear OS. Now I'm hoping Wear OS 3 will kind of spruce that up a bit more. Excuse me. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, Two Turbo, no new wear on my Fossil Carlisle RIP. Yeah, same thing. My TicWatch Pro LTE, technically the TicWatch Pro 2, that's not going to get it because that's on a Snapdragon 2100. My TicWatch C series, that they're not going to get it. I had a Fossil for a little while, but I gave it to my brother and I think he broke it. So yeah, a lot of those older smartwatches are completely off the update train. From McCorkerin, I'm just glad to find out my TicWatch Pro 3 will eventually be able to upgrade to the new Wear OS. It's definitely been a concern for a lot of us. And again, I'm super bummed. With Samsung getting on board, I was hoping that this was going to iterate faster. Apple Watch is dominant because it is genuinely... Oh, I've got my Apple Watch over here. It's not charged. It is genuinely a wonderful wrist computing platform. It bridges a lot of the applet single use, like streamlined use cases with some great fitness tracking capabilities. And I was really hoping that with Google bringing in more expertise from Fitbit and partnering with Samsung, that we would see this iteration faster. But basically, we're going to see almost another year of Apple Watch kind of being a tier ahead. So when we get to Wear OS 3, second half of next year,
I really hope that all of these companies are going to be working together to showcase a platform that will bring some better benefits. We need developers. Wear OS 2 on this hardware is super sleek. I mean, it's almost Apple Watch fluid on my Tick watches. But we need all the developers on board. And I think it's correct for developers to kind of slow play until they see some Wear OS 3 out in the environment. Like, I wouldn't be putting a ton of effort into building applets for Wear OS 2 just in case anything changes up along the way. And these Snapdragon Wear 4100 watches are like cheaper than Apple Watch SE with more capabilities. The Tick Watch E3 has better fitness tracking, has better battery life, has almost as fluid an interface for most of the little applets that you're going to want to use, has a lot of those Tick Health features. Like, again, I was tracking the noise in my car. I wasn't doing it from my phone. I was doing it from my Tick Watch. I can't tell you, like, having a little decibel meter on your wrist gives you data for your surroundings. Like, you feel like, oh, you know, like, it's kind of loud. Okay, you've had that feeling a lot. Can you quantify what 90 dB really feels like? Can you quantify what 100 decibels really sounds like? So you fire up your watch, you tap the little applet, and then you get an accounting of what that feeling actually is in your environment. I love those little single-use applets. It's so good. Barry Johnson, absolutely just excellent pricing on the Mobvoi gear. I've got videos on both the TicWatch Pro and the TicWatch E3. Raymondit, I completely agree. I totally miss Pebble too. That would be a really good time for a company to like revive Pebble. And from McCorkran, I bet you this is probably accurate. TicWatch has probably been losing sales just because of this uncertainty these last 3 or 4 months. So again, you don't want to feel like you're going to spend $200 or $300 on something and then it's going to be left out in the cold. This is very good. News. This is happy news for those of us that are into competitive smartwatches. Sorry, just catching up on. I'm way behind on this chat right now. There we go. All right. So, good news for Wear OS 3. I wanted to kind of talk this out a little bit because I just think it's a step in the right direction. And I'm trying not to like take stuff too personal. Like my main phone SIM card daily driver for my road trip was my OnePlus 9 Pro. I did not use the OnePlus 9 Pro for my main production machine. That was the V60. The V60 tackled almost all of my heavy lifting. But when it came time to set up a live stream, the 5G connectivity was significantly stronger. It was like 15% stronger on the OnePlus 9 Pro than it was on my V60. And the Snapdragon 865 seemed to have cellular and Wi-Fi connectivity issues compared to the 855. And the A88 does seem to improve on where we were last generation. Like the 865 at its best could match the 855, but in most cases, it seemed to be a small downgrade for having that separate modem component. So when I did the live stream, that was on 5G because my parents' Wi-Fi was not going to get that done. And I think like the stream got a little chunky from time to time, but the phone did phenomenally well. It drained about 25% of its battery for streaming over an hour, and it never overheated using the front-facing camera, the 5G radio, and the display at its brightest. I feel that's encouraging. Like, that makes me happy. And it's one of those situations where I'm fairly confident that OnePlus has blacklisted Firefox. So Firefox was streaming 720p video using the front-facing camera and a Bluetooth headset. So the Bluetooth wireless, the Bluetooth radio was going too, but it was doing it all on the really low power performance cores.
I was live streaming CPU throttled from my OnePlus 9 Pro, and it was real good. That's how much compute power we are overbuying these days. There is so much that is easily accomplishable. That's not a word, but I'm going to use it like one. Accomplishable. From the lowest compute power hardware in our smart devices. And our high performance gear just kind of takes us up from there for very specific use case scenarios. So, if we want to get back to that feeling of kind of a flagship killer device or, you know, a really solid bang for buck, the OnePlus name brand does not represent that anymore. A OnePlus 9 is feature for feature a great competitor against an S21 or an iPhone 12. The OnePlus 9 Pro is a brilliant competitor that sits in between an S21 Plus and an S21 Ultra and an iPhone Pro, an iPhone 12 Pro. In fact, in many ways, I think it's a way better hardware buy than the iPhone 12 Pro, and you have to step up to the 12 Pro Max. You've heard me all ramble on about this before. So we got to look down to the Nord for the more mainstream daily driver, bread and butter kind of competitor. And I like what I'm seeing for the Nord 2. So this is coming by way of an Antec written up by Andre. OnePlus announces Nord 2 with Dimensity 1200 SoC. So this is using a MediaTek processor, not a Qualcomm processor. And I'm really glad that Anantec broke this down the way that they did. And me and Andre have kind of mixed it up a little on some of our recent conversations. Like we had kind of a Twitter, not feud, but we had a Twitter back and forth when we were talking about the OnePlus throttling. again, well, it's just a scheduler. Yeah, but the scheduler reduces performance. So it's a CPU throttle. And I love people that are being so pedantic about that kind of separation or difference. Well, it's not really throttling, except that the CPU works slower. That's a throttle. It's a lazy way to say it, but I don't feel like breaking. Well, you see, what's happening is the CPU scheduler is changing the dynamics of the information that's being processed through the very specific cores on the processor at different processing clock speeds, and there are three tiers of X1, and that's how it works. CPU works slower. It's a throttle, but I digress. What I'm kind of excited about, and what I'm hoping we'll see for Google's custom SoC, the Dimensity 1200 is a bit more like the Snapdragon 865 than it is like the Snapdragon 888. So on the Dimensity, and I'm sorry, I know this is kind of dry processor SoC stuff here, and if you're listening on the audio version of the podcast, you're getting even less exciting information as I'm screen sharing an SoC breakdown from a Anantec right now. So there are 8 cores. It's an octa-core processor. There are 4 low-power Cortex A55 cores. Like the 865, there are 2 different tiers of performance core. So there are 4 big cores. 3 of them are clocked lower, and 1 of them is clocked higher. So 3 of them are clocked at 2.6 gig and one's clocked at 3 gig. Now, why is that notable? Why is that important? The Snapdragon 888 is also an octa-core, but there is one specifically different fabricated X1 performance core. The Snapdragon 865 followed a similar 4 big, 4 little, and one of the big is a slightly higher clock speed. I feel the performance of the 865 has been more consistent than the more powerful 888. And in part, one of the reasons I feel contributes to the inconsistent performance of the 888 is our inability to properly manage the power draw of the big performance core and the new thirstier GPU. So if we walk back to the performance tier of the Snapdragon 865, it's definitely less powerful in specific use cases, but I think you end up with an overall more consistent performer. So the octa-core setup here is a bit more familiar and resembles a line of SoCs that I think is a better consumer benefit. Sorry, McCorkran 3. It's the crazy SoC breakdown hour. I love it. So, Nord 2, I love it. It looks a lot like a OnePlus 9. Big battery. It's a 4,500 milliamp hour battery, 65 watt charging. I think it's a 1080p display at 90 hertz. But if this Dimensity 1200 is any indication, I'm expecting performance in between a Snapdragon 855 and a Snapdragon 865, which means this phone should be a screamer. Just an absolute powerhouse of an inexpensive phone. And the starting price, 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of storage is starting at €399, which is solid. We're right in line. The main camera is the 50 megapixel Sony IMX766. That's a monster sensor. I believe that's the same sensor or very similar sensor. No, I don't think it's exactly the same. I can't remember my Sony sensor designations, but it's similar to the ultra wide sensor that's on the OnePlus 9 and the 9 Pro. That is a premium tier sensor. So everything about this is looking solid. Wi-Fi 6, 5G connectivity, a 32 megapixel front facing camera, and it's going to come in at €400. So I'm really solid on OnePlus's strategy for the Nord 2. It looks like, that feels a lot like what we would call some kind of flagship killing device. It's going to compete really well against the mid-tier Xiaomi's, especially those that are like on the 765s and 780s. You know, that performance tier is right in line with, it's still overkill for what average consumers actually need to do on their phones. So this to me is the exciting kind of hotter competition tier. Phones $1,000 and higher, I have very specific demands on what I think makes them worth it for the monies. Phones in the $400 to $600 territory that are starting to rock, like crazy powerful internals with good camera sensors and fast and fluid responsive screens, like we're in beautiful competition territory right now. And so now it becomes an even more difficult kind of feature comparison. Like I might make a stronger recommendation for a gaming phone over one of these mid-rangers, like my Black Shark. A Snapdragon 870 versus this Dimensity 1200, that should be a killer fight, and that's all sub $600. I mean, about $100 separates the two, depending on what market or what region you live in. And you're talking about very specific pieces of hardware, like having triggers for gaming versus having a nicer camera for the Nord. I mean, like, that's exactly the kind of showdown that I think people should be trying to check out right now. It's pretty crazy. Ooh, Chatty Boy, that's a good question, though. Nord 2 or 8T? Okay, so a OnePlus 8T. You know what? This is kind of nerd crappy of me, but after shooting on the OnePlus 9 Pro's ultra wide, myself personally, and this is without handling the device, and I really liked the OnePlus 8T. I liked the 8T a lot better than I liked the OnePlus 8. I would probably go Nord 2 over the 8T, if only to get that 50 megapixel camera sensor. The 48 megapixel shooter on the 8T is solid, but if this is the sensor I'm thinking of, and it is a slightly larger sensor than what was on the 8T, I feel the performance on that will be better than the 8T. So that's generally where I'm leaning, and that's super specific. I would not make that as a purchasing recommendation to anyone else.
But the 65 watt charging definitely helps too. I'm actually writing like a little YouTube short, like, why is wireless charging so popular? Because it's less convenient, it's slower, it heats up your phone more. Like, you can't use your phone as easily while wireless charging as if you're plugging in a cable. And then you fast charge on a OnePlus and you're like, yeah, I plugged in for 5 minutes and I'm basically good to go for an entire day. That's a very fair question from Dave Burns. I wonder how the ISPs on the MediaTek will compare. I bet you they're still a generation behind, but a generation behind where Qualcomm is right now is still really solid. So I would imagine imaging processing performance is somewhere in between OnePlus 7 and OnePlus 8. And the camera hardware will hopefully make up some of the difference in that lack of signal clarity, post-processing, HDR image stacking, all that fun stuff. I was pleasantly surprised with the MediaTek Velvet. So the LG Velvet on T-Mobile had a MediaTek, and it was definitely less good for a lot of really busy and complicated image detail, like leaves and trees kind of stuff. But it did better than I thought it was going to do. So the downgrade you face for the image processing, I don't believe is as stark as it's been in years past. from Rosted, wasn't the 8T128 internal storage in the Nord 2 64? As far as I know, the Nord 2 starts at 128. Yeah, according to Anantech, there's an 8 gig, 128 gigabyte model and a 12 gig RAM, 256 gig model, which is kind of the same as their premium tier phones. I don't think any OnePlus phone moving forward. I'm trying to think. Maybe the N200? Did the N200 start at 64? Because I'm pretty sure most of these are now not only 128, but also at least UFS 2. Excuse me, UFS. Oh, yeah. And Antec is saying this is going to be UFS 2.1. So not only, a good amount of storage, but it should be pretty decently fast storage to boot. So that's going to wrap us up for all of our individual stories. Really stoked. I'm probably not going to be able to get my hands on a Nord 2 with any kind of alacrity or any kind of speed. But I'm going to try because I really want to play with more MediaTek. And I've been reaching out to MediaTek PR, and they seem to have zero interest in trying to facilitate any kind of relationship with a reviewer of my size who lives in the United States. And I'm genuinely trying to say, like, this is an incredible conversation about competition and in a market where I mostly only have access to Qualcomm devices. This is funny. Hold on. From Tech Love and Mama, I don't use wireless charging except once in a blue moon and mostly for my buds live. I use a pop socket and I need a phone prop on my phone. I have RA and carpal tunnel. Without a phone prop, it's more difficult to hold my phone, especially a note device. So that's one reason why I don't use wireless charging. Oh, McCorkran, I agree. That's dumb. You were one of the first creators giving them credit for the MediaTek that went into the LG. I don't get it. I want to talk about their products. They don't seem to want me to talk about their products, but I'm going to put it out there. Dimensity 1200 looks like a monster. It looks like exactly the tier of performance that should be considered premium tier. It's going to come at a significant cost savings, and it's going to compete very well against last year's Qualcomm flagships, which kind of offer some users a better experience than what the current top of the line Qualcomm can deliver. So I wanted to wrap this up, doing the road trip and learning a lot along the way. The tech has never been better for accomplishing significantly high tier, high grade work, especially content creation out on the go. Like I would cover trade shows, I didn't travel with a laptop. I've got my Razer gaming laptop. I've got my little Huawei Ultrabook.
I took a lap dock and I took the TCL Nextwear. Now, the lap dock, as we've already made fun of me for, was what I spent a week with the lap dock basically just being a paperweight because I brought the wrong cable. So that was definitely not my most shining moment, but was a good learning experience for me too. But where I wasn't able to use the lap dock, the Nextwear really came in handy. So I also packed a little Bluetooth folding keyboard and a Bluetooth mouse. Both of these are the Microsoft. So the Microsoft Sculpt and the Microsoft OG like folding keyboard. If you can find one of these, this has still been one of the all-time best Bluetooth portable keyboards that I've ever used. It's a little floppy. It doesn't play very well in your lap, but hooking this up to a phone, using a mouse to go along with it, and then just putting a heads-up display on my face was my writing machine. It's where I wrote my scripts. It's where I wrote my articles. It, like, for an entire week, that's how I was getting my work done. You know, I'd wait for Lex to go to bed, and then I also didn't have to worry as much about, like, my laptop screen, you know, waking her up in our hotel room. It genuinely was not just an accessible working experience. It was a nice working experience. The Nextwear, excuse me. The Nextwear definitely brings a challenge where you want to make sure your phone's charged when you use it, because it just draws power off of the USB-C cable. There is no battery in the Nextwear. I feel like kind of just putting them on again. I'm just going to take them out of this right here. I just think they're fun. But this is one of the first mainstream consumer offerings of a solution like this. I know I put out the video and a bunch of people is like, well, these aren't like really the first. There are a bunch of other like boutique-y things that have tried this in the past. And you're like, yeah, but you can't really buy them, or they're way more cumbersome, or they're way less comfortable, or they're way more finicky. And what I think TCL has accomplished here is a genuine consumer facing, not just enthusiast facing, but consumer facing product that it's going to be expensive. It's going to be as expensive as a nice TV, but then you just do this and then you just plug in this cable and you're working in front of a phenomenal HD display. And I feel like that deserves some significant kudos. TCL's accomplishment kept me working for a week where I made a doofus mistake, where I would normally be relying on a lap dock instead. So the other thing I kind of wanted to chat out, as I gingerly put these back in, I got to pack these up and I'm really sad to send them back. This is like kind of like my last hurrah talking about the Nextwear. And I'm hoping that when there's an actual retail version that maybe TCL can hook me up again, because they're really cool. Here, let me get this back in the box. Do, do, do. There we go. I gotta also send a huge shout out. The LG V60 is increasingly re-winning my affection as a workhorse and productivity device. Actually, you know what? Let me see if I can show this. This might be kind of fun. Like I said, I shot and edited everything through PowerDirector on my LG V60. Let me see if. I definitely got to get out of that. That would be embarrassing. And let me turn. No, I think I need screen rotation. Okay, we're going to try and do this live. I wasn't planning on this, but here's my LG V60. And I just want to try and bring up one of my editing timelines on PowerDirector. For all the people that complain about like the productivity of mobile, or how it's kind of difficult, or you're going to waste so much time getting this done. That's only true if you're very unfamiliar with what you're using. So I want to switch to screen share. Okay, good. Let's see. No, that didn't work. Give me one second. I'm gonna try and do this. I really feel like...
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Capture USB video. There we go. Huzzah! We did it. Okay, so this is my V60. So I'm just going to fire up PowerDirector here. And this is my timeline for the... Oh, this is the timeline I used for myreviews.org working remote video. And everything here is as accessible as if I were working obviously I do a lot of cutting in DaVinci Resolve. DaVinci Resolve is absolutely a better video editing service or platform. But, you know, I'm able to kind of fade in. I get into my talking stuff. I've got some B-roll. This is a screen grab from my phone. They have their own distinct transition. You know, it kind of plays. It looks real cool. Like, oh, look at that transition. And then it fades back out. I've got a transition that takes me back into me as a talking head. And then I'm able to play with multiple audio tracks in ways that I can keep my B-roll playing out at 4K 60 frames per second. Everything was shot 4K 60, even though I couldn't upload 4K 60. And my entire timeline is here and scrubbable. I've got like a transition here with a photo. And just kind of get into that. And again, like all of this takes is a little time to familiarize yourself with a slightly different editing timeline. And you can see like that was my setup for the V60. I had it on the Rode, the Rode camera mount. And then I also had a little LED panel just to give me some additional fill. I mean, this is such high tier. The ability to craft and to edit and organize. And, you know, anytime I want to bring in another clip, it's so easy to find and drop. So I've got project files. Like here are my little RDO bits. From reviews.org. So I've got their end setup. You know, so again, you want to get to the end. Hold on, let me scrub this. That was just another screen grab. Oh, there we go. So they use this ending sequence where I was able to also crop, punch in, and use their end title card. Oop, I didn't handle that very well though. You can see that little shift. I didn't notice that before. I didn't crop my video exactly the same. Whoops. The video is already live, so there's nothing I can do about that now. But this was high tier. This is extremely high tier. And now I've lost my main camera. I broke my camera to show you how my V60 could work. Everyone screen grab that. I definitely need that. Hold on one second. Let me see if I can get back in. I might have to just make a new one here. Video capture device, add existing, Aja UTAP. Nope. Oh, that's totally dead. Hold on. All I might even need to do the plugging it in and unplugging it again. That's hilarious. Hey, and we're back. I did it. I fixed it live. So I'll fix that later. All right. from 2 Turbo, do you prefer... Nope, from 2 Turbo. There we go. Do you prefer PowerDirector to KineMaster? I do. KineMaster still has the faster rendering engine. So when you finally finish up your project, if you're on a premium tier phone, it will render faster. But what I like about PowerDirector is the way that it kind of stacks your timeline. And the most recent updates have added a bunch of plugins that I genuinely like. Transitions that are a little bit smoother and audio processing. So for some of those shots, I am actually using their stabilization plugin. And then for some of the A-roll where I'm just talking to camera, the noise reduction isn't bad. It's pretty solid. So the other major, do I have it here on the desk?
I do not.
So the other major win was also taking my my Rode, the Wireless Go, the Wireless Go 2 microphones out into the field. What I was disappointed by was Rode does not allow you to pull the audio off of the transmitters. So these are wireless microphones. You can see I've always got them just sort of magnetically strapped to my chest. They're very distracting because they're kind of shiny and glossy and they reflect light and people seem to really cry about that. But one of the major features is that as you're recording, it stores the audio on the transmitter. So if anything drops out, if anything happens to the signal as it goes to the receiver, you've got a backup on your person. That only works if you hook them up to a laptop. The only way to get the audio off of the transmitter is off of a laptop. So unfortunately, there is no mobile workflow for using the Rode Wireless Go 2 to pull the audio and then resync it to your video. It just doesn't work like that. So using the transmitter, some of those videos I shot using the V60, the LG camera app. One of the videos I shot using the V50, so I could just input on the headphone jack. But the V60 headphone jack uses that miserable, that absolutely awful noise cancellation. So on that, I actually shot it on Filmic and then used the USB-C so that I could connect the receiver to the V60 with USB-C. Again, it's figuring out the workflow. If you haven't taken some time to sort of acclimatize yourself to the different work processes, this is all way more complicated and way more difficult. But as long as you've played around with a few things and you're familiar with how these apps work, your workflow isn't much interrupted. And again, we're talking about 4K video editing from a phone, and it's just absolutely crazy that we have those capabilities. But the last, the win for this whole setup was my Peak Design tripod. So the Peak Design portable tripod is so easy to travel with. And it was so handy because it's got like a little, I'm using it right now on my desk. I need to get a better stand for my camera. But they've got the built-in, I can't get it. Hold on. Everything about this stream is not working the way I thought it would. So it's got the little built-in smartphone cradle, little retractable cradle there. But then I also hooked it up to that Rode and I was able to keep a light on one arm. It's a cold shoe mount. I was able to keep a light and a little mic mount and it was so easy. Like I just popped it out there, put my phone in the cradle, push record, walked to the other side of the phone and shot a whole video. And that, I don't know how you can make it more accessible than that. I don't know how you can make it easier, especially when you're editing from your camera. So if you shoot 4K video, you know, at least 100 megabit per second data rate, you have to wait to transfer those files off of your camera to another computer. And here, as soon as I was done shooting my A-roll, I just dropped that immediately into my video editing timeline and started cutting the sections that I needed for that video. And then when you go to capture your B-roll,
you already have your picture lock on your A-roll, so you know exactly what clips, just based on your timeline, you need to shoot. So you take your phone and your camera and you shoot. And literally, as you shoot the piece of B-roll, you get out of your camera app, go back into your video editing timeline, and drop the clip right where you need it. So it's a different kind of workflow than shooting and editing in Resolve, but it's eminently accessible and it's crazy fast. Like you're really sort of in that moment for shooting and editing, shooting and editing, shooting and editing. It's not, I'm going to shoot, then edit, and then maybe I also need to go and do some pickups. You know, like I always get to the end of a project here in the Gadget Lab and like, oh, I needed that one extra clip of like a phone plugging in the headphones. And then I've got to set up my camera again, reshoot that clip, transfer it to a computer, drop it into my timeline. And I almost don't want to finish the video because that took so long. And here on PowerDirector, as soon as I'm done shooting that clip, it goes immediately into my timeline where I need it. So it's just genuinely a delightful workflow. I traveled to New Mexico. I have a very expensive tripod. The Peak Design tripod is like a $300 tripod. The Rode Vlogger kit, that, you know, it's a phone mount. I had like a $50 LED panel. The Rode Wireless Go 2, those are not cheap microphones, but they're not disgustingly expensive. But I didn't travel with a $1,000 camera body and $2,000 in lenses. And I didn't travel with a $2,000 gaming laptop. And I didn't have to stop to transfer files and edit. Everything was sort of immediate. I mean, again, I can't express how that helps your flow. I always constantly need to reiterate how that enhances your focus. Because as soon as I'm done shooting my A-roll, I'm cutting. Like, you don't get to do that on a desktop or a laptop. So I was very pleased with the tech side of this experiment. I feel like my mobile game has never been stronger. From starting to do like vlogs while I was out in Vegas to actually trying to produce and shoot content for Newegg, all from mobile devices. Now, even with my laryngitis and my inability to upload videos quickly, I got two main reviews, a live stream, and a reviews.org video. I got four major projects finished over the course of a week, all from phones. I don't know how better to express like how you can push your phone use farther. Like, I'm trying to live what I'm preaching here, and I feel like I succeeded on the tech side way better than I was expecting to. Oh, from Aditya Anil. Everyone knows you need a minimum $3,500 kit, camera, custom built PC, premium paid software to make YouTube videos. Whatever it is you're doing, it's simply wrong. Well, and I love it. You know, like, you don't need fancy gear to make your videos. I'm shooting this on a Red. I feel like there's an experiment in me next where I take like a Pixel 3a and I try to replicate some of this. I won't be able to do 4K 60, but I should still be able to produce 4K videos on a Pixel 3a. The only thing I'm kind of immediately worried about is storage space, because Pixels, you know, 128 gig gets really tight. Oh, that was another reason. I've got a 256 gig card in my LG V60. I wasn't hurting for storage space on 4K video. So, Dave Burns, 4K 60 or die. I mean, I think we can do a couple videos 4K 30. I don't think it's going to hurt anybody. Please hammer, don't hurt them. So I might try and break this down, especially with my weird video issues here on the live stream. But maybe I'll do a cut up of this, or maybe I'll shoot a separate standalone video. It's been even more encouraging to see what we can do, how much farther we can drive our phones. I think it's patently absurd. I think it's pants on head stupid to ever discuss average consumer use when we're talking about devices over $600. At that point, you're just making filler to confirm someone else's bias. If you're not really trying to drive a premium tier mobile computing experience, then you are going to be so much happier saving money and shopping more in the mid-range. If it's Galaxy A series, if it's, you know, Xiaomi Lights or Renos or Mi phones or Nords, any of these other devices that are even at that mid-tier, they're overkill for average daily driver use. I feel like we really genuinely need to change the way that we talk about these products. You know, there is a very good reason to buy a Galaxy S21 Ultra. It's really not an S21. It's really Samsung trying to extract more money from people who like the Note. You know, we're going to sell you a Note, and you also still need to buy your S Pen separately, and your charger, and a case for it, and a silo case for it so you can keep your S Pen. It's not an S21. It's different camera sensors. It's a different display. It's got a digitizer built into the screen. The S21 is not an the S21 Ultra is not an S21. It's a Note for more price gouging. But there's a very good reason to get it if you're going to run that phone like a mini workhorse, like an office productivity machine, like a mobile content creation device. In fact, the S21 Ultra makes more sense in my brain for the arguments Samsung is making for it than the S21 Plus does. The Ultra accomplishes more of what Samsung's marketing claims an S21 can do. And so same thing, a OnePlus 9 Pro. When I can get my hands back on an Xperia 1 Mark III, there are reasons why we would want to step up to those devices. But if you're still doing the same kind of basic auto mode, point and shoot, you're having those really in-depth arguments about Gcam, go get a Pixel. I mean, seriously, it's so good. It's auto, it's streamlined, it's already kind of all put together for you. Why are we pretending that we need $1,000 phone horsepower to take auto HDR photos? You know, like that ship has sailed. We are no longer penalized with terrible cameras on $400 phones. And if you're not maximizing what an expensive camera can do, if you're not trying to shoot in the most challenging conditions, if you're not trying to craft high quality vlogs or shoot video projects or do documentary work, don't do that. Some YouTuber said that it was terrible low light performance for video. Was it? I don't know, man. I've seen some like $300 phones that have these low light image sensors that actually can create better HD video at night than some of our premium phones can. So I'm so tired of this rigged gadget reviewer commentary. We know that the most clicks are going to happen on the most expensive devices for the gadget community, but then we're still acting like those are the preferred recommendations for opening your Instagrams and sending your emails. And that's awful. That really is truly a tragedy. I want to know, like, if you're a tech reviewer, what do you do on your phone? And how do you tax a $1,000 device? I just took a road trip where I shot professional video content for me. I shot video content for another news outlet. They picked up my video. They thought it looked great. And I hosted a live stream podcast. I also edited and uploaded the podcast that TK and I did this last Thursday. I was in a hotel room. I didn't wait to get home to upload the audio of that podcast from a computer. I took the audio, cut it up, and re-rendered it and uploaded it to our podcast hosting service. So that's another thing. That's five professional grade things I did in the course of 1 week on phones. I never had to break out a laptop. I never had to break out a computer. I never had to transfer. I never had to stop. I'm getting so much crankier whenever I can't do something from a phone. because that's how much compute power is genuinely in our pockets right now. There is no reason I should ever have to stop unless I want to. If I want to do a setup like this, great, but I shouldn't have to. And I bet you if I flipped out this camera for one of my phones, the stream wouldn't be that much different. So, from Jeff, everyone say hey to El Jefe. But some random guy on the interwebs says, again, someone with more subscribers than you has a different opinion. So they're more popular than you are. They must have the correct opinion. You're just a hater. If you have no opinion of your own, why are you leaving comments on YouTube? If you haven't experienced this or you don't have some kind of counterpoint, what are you doing? Are you just marketing for some other YouTuber? I'm trying to show you like the real world application and the use of this stuff. It's hilarious. Oh, but you wouldn't want to do that because you can't use the same programs as you can on a MacBook. Why would that matter? Why would you care about that? Just do it. It's good. Oh, from McCorkran 3. I use a Pixel 4a and a V60. Total is about the same as an S21 basic. Again, it's two phones for the price of one. Yeah, I mean, like the Pixel experience as a streamlined communicator is brilliant. I'm really excited to be getting back here and I can kind of play with some of the, we just got the recent update for the Pixel 5. But yeah, there are so many wonderful options that really get you specifically into someone's exact needs. I just hate this. Like, well, we're going to take the Galaxy S21 as a foregone conclusion. That's the phone we're going to compare every other phone against, and it's always going to win. BS. Oh, that's so terrible. If Google hasn't given up, it may have a chance. I'm not really quite sure what you mean there, but I'm seeing we're probably going to have Pixel 5a and Pixel 6 this year. And especially if the Pixel 6 has its own SoC, it could be a really solid option. Oh, and TK's in the chat. Everyone say sabajo. Kappa Cash. Again, I think you're showing your age here. Kappa Cash says, all they want to do is see how fast Temple Run loads. Are we still using Temple Run? Is that the loading test that we're using? I thought it was Genshin. I thought Genshin or Genshin? Was the new, that's the only game ever worth showing in your smartphone reviews. Yeah. App speedruns are worse than useless. Like they actively take resources away from the internet. It could be used for anything better. Well, I'm not saying, so El Jefe is saying Temple Run is so much fun, though. I'm not saying Temple Run isn't fun. I'm saying it's low value as a benchmarking utility. I would not turn to Temple Run to showcase the performance power generationally of different cell phones. I would just load up Temple Run and play it as a game which is fun to waste time with. If you want to sort of compare performance, I would look outside gaming also. And why is it that no other tech reviewer tries to measure the real world performance of apps that you can actually install? Geekbench gives you zero indication of what phones are going to be better for file management, of what phones are going to be better for productivity apps, of what phones are going to be better for gaming performance. I can show you big scores on some phones that perform noticeably worse at gaming than phones that got smaller scores. So why is it? And again, I sent this out as an invitation, if you will. You know, folks like the editors at Anantech, you have no real world testing in your performance reviews, or very little. You have some browser testing, so that's good. That definitely helps showcase some real-world application. But you can load an app, time the performance of that app, and see how it genuinely differs from phone to phone, even with similar hardware. you're going to have conversations about optimization and you're not actually testing different apps to see how well optimized they are, then you're just guessing and often getting it wrong. Again, my LG V60 was a better pick for PowerDirector because of the optimizations that LG has included for image processing. And PowerDirector on a V60 is consistently faster than any of the other phones that I've tested with 888s. So what are we doing? Again, if you can't really properly disclose like what a more specific experience is going to be, and you're just relying on Geekbench scores or AnTuTu or some kind of 3D graphics bench, you still have zero idea of what the phone will really do when a consumer gets their hands on it. It's all hypothetical. It's all speculation. So my voice is starting to flake, so I think it's about time to wrap this up. But a mostly successful return to the Gadget Lab. It is kind of funny that my stream last week over 5G on a OnePlus 9 Pro was actually just a little less interrupted than me finally getting back with all of my Gadget Lab gear, but encouraging. Excuse me. So I'm really glad to be back. A bunch of videos are kind of backed up because I wasn't able to produce as much on the road as I was hoping to, but a lot of audio gear. Just so much audio gear, and I'm so happy. My ears have been having so much fun testing out different DACs and amps and finally getting to showcase some of this hardware. This next week is going to be real good for headphone listeners, especially if you've been interested in checking out Apple Lossless, Apple Spatial, Amazon HD, Spotify HD. Maybe you were already subscribed to Tidal, Tidal Masters. It's a conversation that I'm happy consumers are showing more interest in because techies have written it off. How many years we've been going with techies who say they don't care about higher quality audio? It's not a selling point. You know, this Apogee has something called a quad sum DAC. Where have we heard quad DAC before, right? So if you, in years past, had a phone with quad DAC, no one ever really gave this any credit. It wasn't a feature worth paying more for. Oh, it's got a headphone jack. That's so 2000 and late. But that was a premium feature, quad DAC. How much do you need to spend to replicate quad DAC? This retails for $200. So having that built into your phone was never considered a benefit, was never considered any kind of appreciable feature. LG should be charging less for their devices because you don't get as much, even though they're almost exactly the same feature for feature as a Samsung. And they put in a $200 retail headphone jack into their phones. Now that your phone doesn't have a headphone jack, to replicate what you had built in on a $700 V60, you got to spend $200. And if you really want to take advantage of Apple Lossless, you're probably not doing it on AirPods. If you really want to take advantage of Amazon HD, if you really want to spruce up your Spotify, you got to spend. Them's the breaks. We keep letting techies excuse this behavior from manufacturers. And now we're finally getting better quality, but we don't have the hardware to play it on. I mean, like, I feel like I should be encouraging a run on older LG phones. Like, if you can get yourself a G8, you've just gotten yourself a phenomenal portable media player because your iPhone ain't gonna cut it. See, Jeff, I mean, they were playing us all along. Jeff says, it's sad, right? Now that people care, you got to pay for additional hardware. LMA. Oh, the irony. Not just the irony. I feel like a part of this was super strategic. Apple wasn't going to support a higher tier of Apple Music until they had partnerships and accessories in place where you would buy your phone and have to buy a dongle and have to buy an adapter and have to buy nice headphones, or a cable to plug your AirPods, your $550 AirPods Max, which don't have a 3.5 millimeter cable. You have to buy that separate. So let's say you do. Do I have my iPhone over here? No, my iPhone SE is over on the other table. You buy your iPhone, you buy a USB adapter, you buy one of these portable DAC amps that may or may not have the right adapter or connector for the Lightning cable. Then you can buy your headphones to plug into all of that chain. You just had to buy three different cables and adapters and dongles to get your iPhone to fully utilize the service that Apple is charging you for. It's brilliant. It's perfect. It is Apple's business model summed up exquisitely in a nutshell. We broke your phone, and here are all the things you need to buy to fix it. Because it could have just been in the phone. I have an iPhone SE over there that's still reasonably good at around CD quality playback. You can't tell me that a more premium phone shouldn't have just had an upgraded premium audio experience, because I had that on phones. We had it. We discounted it. We overlooked it. We found every excuse to tell people not to buy it. And consumers still seem to be interested in better audio, but now they can't play it. I'm not bitter. I'm super bitter. So yeah, we're getting out of here. Folks, I want you to have an amazing week with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology this week. I want you to do awesome with your technology this week. And I'll catch you back here next week for a probably just as cranky and bitter pants weekly podcast. Because again, I'm telling you, this stuff gets really good, and it could have been in our phones. It should have been all in our portable devices, but we gave it up. We let it go, and now we don't get it anymore. So vote with your wallet means more than just satisfy the bias of Samsung promoting channels. Vote with your wallet means actually pay for the products to keep businesses alive that support the features you care about. And I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the SDGQA podcast on the Monday Morning Tech Chat show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. Take care of your ears, because if you take care of your ears, you'll take care of your brain. I'll catch you back here next week. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.